All right, well, let's go ahead and get started. Genesis chapter 3. We're going to start in verse 1. And we're going to be looking at the conversation between the serpent and Eve. So, verse 1, now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? It's hard to know what inflection he had, but you could see right out of the gate that he's putting it in a negative light. He's not saying, did God actually say you could eat of every single tree in the world except this one? He doesn't put it that way, does he? Because he's anti-authoritarian. He's a revolutionary. He says the opposite. He says, can you believe? Did he actually say you can't eat of this tree? Ugh. Well, very crafty. I wanted to make this point right at the very beginning. Crafty can be translated wise. We don't exactly know what it means precisely, but we know that it's not necessarily bad to be crafty. It's good to be crafty. God is crafty. In fact, the Bible portrays God as more crafty than Satan. You know, God lies to the devil. Did you know that? God lies to the devil. Yeah, thou shalt not lie does not always mean thou shalt not lie. Sometimes you should lie. Right? Tweet that. All right. Pastor Brandon. It's Pastor Brandon tweets out of context tweets. That could be entertaining. Right. Well, Rahab's a great example. But God is the best example because God clearly lied to the devil. How do I know? Well, the book of Colossians tells us that quite plainly, tells us that God put him to open shame, and that if the devil would have known the intentions of the cross, he would not have crucified Jesus. But he didn't know God's intentions. God omitted certain information, concealed certain information from the devil, so that when Jesus was crucified on the cross, the devil thought he was gaining victory, but in reality, the tables were turning on him. That's right. The serpent was crafty. As crafty as all the created beings, the most crafty of all the created beings. But of course, the created beings cannot be as crafty as the creator. And so God lies. You know, it's not always wrong to lie. And when you're playing basketball and you fake left and go right, you didn't lie out to them. It's a basketball game. Hey, that's disingenuous. I want to play against people who are authentic. Right? Good job, Tim. That's good, good. So it's not always wrong to be crafty. Jesus tells us that we are to be as harmless as doves, but what? As shrewd or as wise as serpents. That's right. You need to teach your children how to be shrewd. Are there certain situations where you want your children to be shrewd and not gullible, naive, suckers? Yeah, for sure. You want your children to be wise to the ways of the world. You don't want them to be a bunch of doe-eyed simpletons. You want them to be crafty. Otherwise, what's going to happen to them? They're going to send a whole lot of money to Nigerian princes. That's right. They're going to be suckered, or they're going to be groomed by Disney. You know, who knows? Your children need to know that they are under assault. There are liars, deceivers. There's crafty serpents. And crafty serpents don't present their lies to the children when the parents are around, right? They know that they need to talk to the children when the parents aren't around. And so you want your kids to have a deep sense of craftiness. Being a Christian doesn't mean you're a dupe. Being a Christian doesn't mean you're a sucker. Being a Christian doesn't mean that you go out of your way to let people steal all of your money, or let the government steal it, or let Visa steal it, or to let the, you know, shyster steal all your money. You are not called to be a sucker, right? You should be as wise. You should be wiser than the serpent. All right. One of the things to develop craftiness or shrewdness is to know all of the various forms of lies, or the forms of fallacies that can be used in this world. Satan is the father of fallacies. And everybody in here, if you don't want to be a sucker, you need to learn the fallacies. Not only to avoid being deceived yourself, but also to avoid deceiving your own self, right? Because your fears, your anxieties, your idolatries, your covetousness can actually cause you to deceive your own self with fallacies. You know, your heart doesn't need the devil to lie to yourself. But also you need to be shrewd to avoid other people lying. I got a book here for you. This is a 7th and 8th grade level book on fallacies that we teach here at Christ Church Academy. It's called The Amazing Dr. Ransom's Bestiary of Adorable Fallacies. It's a fun, easy book to read. But it's this the story of Dr. Ransom going out into the wild and cataloging all of the various fallacies that he finds out in the world. And so it's good. You got a lot in here. You got ad hominem. Anybody know that one? Y'all know ad hominem. Right, you just attack the person and not the argument. Personal assault or to the man. That's right. Tu quoque, which is basically, well, you do it too, but then you're making a bad analogy, right? There's transfer, which we'll talk about in a second. Satan does most of these fallacies you can find either done explicitly by Satan in the Bible or implicitly. A transfer is one that he does in this particular passage quite well. We'll look at that in a second. Ipsedixit is improper appeal to authority. Well, you know, my so-and-so said this or this, right? And they're not an authority on it. So learning all of these particular fallacies is important. Vulvarism, that's when your pastor teaches you something and then you say, he's just saying that because. That's vulvarism, right? He's just saying that because he's a pastor or a man or a jerk or whatever, right? A genetic fallacy is when your pastor teaches you something and you say, what book did you read that in? That's a genetic fallacy. See, it's either true or it's not true regardless of what book I read it in. You see what I mean? I'm reading Mein Kampf right now. That's Hitler's autobiography. And obviously, if he says something true, then what? It's true, even if Hitler says it. Now, he doesn't say a lot of true things. But the point is, truth is truth regardless of who says it or doesn't say it. So we got all kinds of things in here. There's 50 of them. I'm not going to go through all of them. But maybe one day take some time to learn the fallacies so you don't become a sucker, right? Or so you're not so easily self-deceived, right? We should strive as Christians to deal with arguments in good faith and not to commit any fallacies. We want to receive the truth if it's true and not put up any fallacious defenses. And we want to make sure we're not lying to anyone else. We want to make sure no one's lying to us. Amen. Eve was a sucker. Eve was duped. Eve was naive. And Eve was inexperienced, right? And many of us are inexperienced and could be duped for that same reason. But even worse, we're not only inexperienced, we are sinful. Eve wasn't sinful. So Eve didn't have a fallen nature. She was just inexperienced. We are not only inexperienced, but we are liars at heart. And so we really have to work by the power of the Spirit to not sucker, not lie and deceive, and not be suckered. All right? Look at the particular verse we're just looking at and see if you can identify one of the tactics. And I got some of these tactics from a particular pastor who got them from another pastor who got them from another pastor. So this isn't my original ideas. In fact, I have no original ideas, just so you know. I don't have original ideas. I'm not smart like that. I'm like the librarian. You go to the librarian and she has all the books behind her, and you want a question, she just reaches off the shelf and hands it to you. But what do you think? Look at verse 1. He said to the woman, did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? There's a lot of correct answers here, so don't be afraid. What do you think?
He's trying to confuse her, right? So I don't know what fallacy this would be, the confusing one.
Did he actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? Oh, that's the new one these days. Yeah, he's gaslighting. Did he say that? You think he's confused? You think he's confused? You think he needs information from Eve? So he's definitely playing dumb here. He doesn't need her help. He's not confused. This is not a genuine question. This is not a good faith question. This is a leading question, right? Anything else? So what's he think? What's he implying about God? Yeah, this is how you lead. This is how you begin a good gossip conversation. Right? This is how you do it. You're like, did he really actually say this? Yeah, that's another way. That's another thing he's doing. He's casting his competition in the worst possible light. That's one thing he's doing. It's a sales tactic, right? I heard a particular pastor say recently that he went to purchase a van, and the salesman said, "This is the only van in the market." No offense to Josh. He would never do this, right? But I talked to him before this class and told him not to take anything offensive, but he is a Christian salesman, right? That's right. So this particular salesman, though, he said, "Now, look, you don't want to go buy one of the competition's vans. They don't have safety features on this particular part of the vehicle. And just imagine what happens when the vehicle rolls." And he's like, whoa. Well, that's important. Why don't they have safety features on this door here in case the van rolls? He goes to the other salesperson. The other salesperson says, "Well, of course we don't. Our vans don't roll. Their vans are 90% of all the vans that roll." It's like, well, no wonder. He goes back to the other salesperson, and the other salesperson says, "What? Well, that's because we're 90% of the vans on the road. That's why we are 90% of the rolls. All vans roll. So what do we do here?" Right? But casting the competition in the worst possible light, that's a bad tactic. Don't fall for it. And always remember what the proverb says. The proverbs say that he who hears, when a story is told, the first person that tells it to you and the first person you hear, you're going to believe it. Right? But then when the other side of the story is told, then you have careful wisdom, right? You never receive an accusation like that. How many witnesses do you need to receive an accusation? Two or three. That's right. And just because there's hearsay or gossip or a little anecdote, that's not truth. That's not evidence. So don't be a dupe. And if someone's trying to gossip to you and trying to get you to join their little factious club, don't listen to the lies that they spread. Right? Don't be a sucker. Any other tactics you see here? What about authority? What's he doing with authority? You ever had a salesman or a manipulator of any kind, a gossip, you know, a backbiter, try and get you to turn on your authority? Right?
All the time. You always see this coming at, "This is not your father's boss. This is not your grandfather's whatever."
Because my grandfather is an idiot.
Yeah. An old sucker, he's no idiot.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever had a salesperson like try to pressure you into something and you were like, "Well, I need to talk to my wife or I need to talk to my husband," and they pushed right there at that point? Man, that would make me mad, right? If the you should always, if you're going to make a big decision like that, you should always say, "I need to talk to the person I'm married to," right? Or, "I need to talk to my authority to make a big decision like that." You can be guaranteed you're making a stupid decision and an emotional, impetuous decision if you have not asked the people in your life that you are your authority, or you haven't asked the wise people in your life. You just tell them and you don't actually ask. You can rest assured you're making a quick, impetuous decision. And but notice here, right here, he's putting God in a negative light, and he's also disparaging God's authority. Anytime a salesperson is negative toward your spouse, or towards your church, or your pastors, or your elders, or anyone in authority, you should just immediately cut that relationship off, right? And yeah, we got a few salesmen. You're a professional salesman, and Josh as well, and I guess Tim, you're a salesman too. Yeah, and I guess you are. Brody, you're kind of a salesman. Plumbing sales, interesting. Oh, before you were, that's right, that's true. That's good. My wife's a little bit in sales. Is that everybody? Pretty much everybody. And of course, sometimes you're in a service industry, you still have to sell yourself. Like, you somehow have to convince them to use your product. So we're all sort of in sales in some sense. If they ever try to rush the decision, then what? Just immediately back out. If you feel cornered, what you want is the product to sell itself, right? You want to be convinced with rational, true arguments, not to be rushed. "Hey, why do you need to talk to your wife? Are you a man or what?" We're done with that. All right. Good. Let's go on to verse 2. "And the woman said to the serpent," notice, got to point this out, He's talking to the wife here. But it seems later on, I think it's verse 6, that Adam's standing right there. So we already see, and we talked about this last week, we already see the role reversal. We already see that Adam is not exercising dominion or headship. We already see that Satan is disrespecting the covenantal hierarchy. We already see all of that. Typical liar, right? Typical church splitter, disregarding hierarchy, making BFFs with everyone, and then gossiping about the authority. That's what church splitters do, just like Satan, right? We may eat, and the woman said to the serpent, "No, we may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." All right, so what's our first mistake here? Talking to the devil. You don't talk to snakes, right? Should have been a cue. Some people think all the animals could talk back then. But who knows? But she doesn't seem to think it's weird that a snake is talking, right? So maybe they all talked, like C.S. Lewis. That'd be cool. Probably. But her big mistake was talking to the devil, right? And not only talking to him, but being nice and polite to him. Right? She was taught by, you know, her pastors that it's important to be nice to everyone at all times. Winsome. You never know. Maybe she could have won him over to the Lord, you know. This is a witnessing opportunity, she thought. Like little kids being sent into public school. They're missionaries. She's a missionary. You don't be nice to the devil. You lie to the devil, and you are rude to the devil, and you curse the devil. And you pray that the devil would be cursed and be sent to hell for all eternity, right? What did Jesus say when he was having a conversation with the devil? A lot of rude things. Get behind me, Satan. You know, Jesus, hey, where's the winsomeness? No, you are to be rude sometimes. And if a shrewd, savvy manipulator, liar, salesman or gossip or factious person is trying to take advantage of your niceness, they're being rude. You understand what I mean? If they've got their foot in your door and you're saying no, and they won't take no for an answer, or they won't take yes for an answer, or if you say, I need to talk about this, I need to look into this, could you email me, and they won't listen, and they're being pushy, and you're just trying to be polite, then what do? Click. You don't waste a second's breath thinking that that's not a Christian thing to do. We are not called to be suckers. Bad manipulators can take advantage of your niceness, and you don't need to feel the burden to dance around their manipulation, right? And sometimes they're being polite, but it's really just a ruse. You should at all times, and this is really, she shouldn't have been talking to the devil at all. There should have been a swift machete chop with zero words, right? And but if you're going to talk to the devil, then you need to make sure you control the conversation. And anytime someone's trying to sell you on something, you need to have your guard up and you need to be in control of the conversation. You ask the questions. They don't ask the questions. They don't need to know about your life and your private life and all those things. You ask the questions. And if they try to take over the conversation, move along. Make sense? Now, why is it important for Christians to be resistant to manipulative sales tactics? Why do you think? So that we can be good stewards. That's right. And so that we can pass down an inheritance to our children and not get it stolen from us and not get it robbed. And we have to train our children to not be dupes either so they don't lose it. Right. There's a lot of blessings in the Bible. The word blessing is mentioned like over 500 times in the Bible. And the overwhelming majority of those times is talking about blessings on this side of heaven. Now, there's totally tons of blessings on the other side of heaven, obviously. But there's a lot of blessings in the Christian life in this life, prosperity, wealth, inheritance. But we have to be shrewd if we're going to maintain it. Otherwise, you're going to spend your whole life making all kind of money, but never having anything in the end. And so you've got to be shrewd and wise if you're going to hold on to something and have something in the very end. Amen. This is definitely kingdom work here. Verse 4. But the serpent said to the woman, "You will not surely die, Right? See any tactics here? Well, he's minimizing the side effects, right? It's like those medicine commercials. You know, ask your doctor about, I don't know, what's the matter? The monkeypox virus, monkeypox vaccine, right? Ask your doctor about that. Isn't it weird that they advertise to people sitting in their living rooms, and then the people in the living rooms go and then they talk to their doctor? It makes no sense. And then they'll say the side effects at the end of the commercial may cause bleeding in the eyes. You know, or they list some things, and my kids hear those commercials, and they list some things, and they're like, whoa. Who would ever? And they say it really fast, though, like an auctioneer's voice at the very end. Well, I'm already done at that point, right? I'm already done. You're trying to minimize the side effects. You're not being open. You're not being honest. You're not trying to have the product sell itself. You're just telling me Fauci says to do it, so do it. Shut up and do it. Love your neighbor. Shut up and do it. Don't worry about the side effects. Well, I'm a no on that one. Like, that's just my personality. I'm not going to let myself be put into that particular situation. But he's minimizing the side effects. He's saying, oh, you won't die. You won't die. Isn't that what our hearts do to us, though, when we're doing sin? We know in our conscience this is wrong. And our conscience is also judging us and telling us, making us feel pain and shame. Right? It's administering the negative shock treatment. That's what consciences do. They administer pain or peace, depending on whether or not you're violating the law. Right. And it's telling you, it's warning you. That's what consciences do. It warns you that judgment is coming. This is why when Adam and Eve sinned, they ran and hid. Right. They knew they'd broken the law. They felt the pain and the shame. And then they ran to avoid the judgment. That's what consciences do. And that's before and after the fall. But your conscience will, if it's hardened and it's trying to avoid judgment or trying to just live life without repentance, it will tell you, oh, you won't die. You won't die. Trying to just make it so that you can go to bed at night. That's what it will do. And that's just like what the devil does. And of course, if God says you will die, then you will surely die. But another tactic he's using is he's making confident, bold assertions with no verification, no evidence. This is what manipulators do. They just assert things confidently, boldly, proudly, and they don't back it up. Right? They don't defend the position. They just assert it. And then you're put in the corner where you have to, like, be rude to try to deny it. Well, you know, I don't know about that. But that's what they do. And if you're weak in a particular area and they make a bold, this will heal you. This will fix you. This will be the saving of that particular weakness you have. You're a sucker. You're vulnerable. That's what manipulative salesmen do. They will try to find your weakness and they will try to show you why their product will fulfill this particular weakness. And they'll make bold assertions and bold promises about it. And if you're weak and vulnerable and you don't know your weaknesses, you better be careful, right? Like a politician, every single presidential election, you know, they promise they're going to change the world. And literally everyone believes it. Like the biggest suckers ever. Hope and change. That was Obama. What was Bernie Sanders? Free college, yeah. Now, it was like, I think Hillary Clinton's was a future you can believe in. Wow. Donald Trump's was make America great again. Who's not for that, right? Let's do it. This is nonsense. These are bold, flat-out lies that there's no way they could ever deliver on that, right? They're not God. And yet they make these bold assertions, and the people of the United States are in a weak, vulnerable state because we're being manipulated by the media at all times. And so we're like, finally, hope and change is here. Bunch of suckers. Because that's what liars do. Liars make confident, bold assertions with no verification. Same thing that medicines do. You know, mainstream medicines and alternative medicines. They promise to fix everything. They got people out there turning themselves blue because they think silver fixes everything, right? It makes these crazy promises, crazy stuff that people do because they think this is going to fix all my problems. And actually, it's just going to do the one thing it actually is supposed to do. It's not going to do any of those other things, right? All right. Any thoughts? Any comments? You ever been suckered by one of those pyramid schemes that promised you're going to make millions? Do what? You got one? Some Jesus juice or some, do what? Essential oils? You know, Josh, essential oils can literally fix all of your problems. There is an essential oil for infertility. Okay. Is that what? I didn't mean to make that connection. You did that. No, there's an essential oil that promises to fix infertility. Come on. Come on. That's not what oils do. Right? And there's a lot of Christians that buy this nonsense and then they spread it to other people. And they don't ask your opinion. They cram it down your throat because they've been duped. Don't be a sucker. Look for the verification. Look for the evidence. Look for the facts. Be rational thinking. Be shrewd. Be data oriented. Amen. Right. Eve was too gullible. She was too naive. She should have looked into the claims that he was making, but she didn't look into it. She impulsively reacted out of naivete. Verse 5. For God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. Wow. And that's what he's really promising her, isn't it? That she could be like God in ways that she wasn't ever meant to be. And of course, that was a lie. Verse 6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food. Notice this. What was the first sense? You know, the senses. What was the first sense that was deceived? Sight. Sight is the weakest of all the senses, in my opinion. That's an opinion. I can't give you the actual evidence for that. Maybe so. But the eyes are definitely weak. The eye gate is a weak gate, right? We have a bad tendency to not put enough guards at the gate of our eyes. And she sees this tree and it looks delicious to her. It was a delight to the eyes, right? How many sins could we say are almost exactly like that? Right? Obviously lust, obviously covetousness, obviously consumerism and materialism and window shopping, right? All of those things. Window, you know, we don't window shop anymore, I suppose, but Pinterest shop, right? Not to pick on Pinterest lovers, but what is Pinterest doing? It's showing you images. But those images are associated with something. They're associated with emotions. They're associated with status. They're associated with all manner of very deep things. And if they can get you to associate that type of object with being popular, being pretty, being accepted, being upper class, being successful, then now you're going to spend your money to appease the Pinterest God. And you see, this is the thing with the Pinterest God is that he's going to switch it up on you so that you're constantly just throwing your money down that volcano forever and ever and ever, constantly suckered by this. Pinterest is the window shopping, the marketing of the past. And I think you got to be very careful about that. There's a lot of different types of lust out there. The lust to be thought attractive, the lust to be thought popular, to be on the in crowd. It's just as powerful as the lust, sexual lust. Right? Don't you think I could do that? I could probably show you some products and I could show you some, you know, arrangements, and you would associate it with certain status symbols. You would associate it with certain emotions, right? Of course, none of us are going to be suckered by the girl in a bikini on the back of the truck, right? Well, hopefully not. I'm like, whoa, look, you know, but that's what the devil wants you to do. He wants you to see something, all right, and then associate that product with that something. You have you're ignorant, by the way. You're naive, you're gullible, you have a lust inside your heart, and he wants that transfer to take place. And if it's done enough times, you will begin to associate this truck with sexiness. This truck with I can get girls. This truck with this will make me be a man. And that's obviously a extreme example, but it's an easy one to to show you what I'm trying to say. All right. There are emotions that you have, a desire to be esteemed, to be popular, to be successful, to be in the in crowd, to be cool like all the other people. And those feelings, through marketing and through lies, get associated with certain products. And then you become the sucker. And I think we're all in on that, probably. Right? If I show you a tough cowboy, right? You got the hat, got the buckle, he's got the horse, he's dirty, right? And that desire for masculinity, that desire to be a lone ranger, right? And I associate that with certain products. You're going to consume those products because it's been associated with that particular thing that you wish you had. Okay? That's called the fallacy of transfer. It's in the book, it's in chapter 1. It's the fallacy of transfer. It's when certain desires and feelings are somehow just like subliminally connected to a certain product. And what's the famous cowboy masculinity? I'm a man. Cigarette. That's right. It's connected. That's right. But you can connect it to certain types of trucks. King Ranch. That's what they're doing. Don't be a sucker. You're not a cowboy. You're not a cowboy. I drive a King Ranch. And I love the heated seats. I love all that about it. But I want to be a cowboy. But I know I'm not a cowboy. I should have been a cowboy. Right? They're going to connect that with all kind of music. The key is to not live your life being pulled around by shrewd marketers. We live in a consumeristic age. Consumerism is probably one of the main religions of America. And we as Christians don't want to be known primarily as consumers. Right? We want to have the freedom and the wisdom to build our own culture, not to be duped by television and the music industry, et cetera, et cetera.